ladies and gentlemen, what is up? It is Tuesday night, and it is time for another episode of Inside the Game. I am DJ Wheat, and joined by three very special co-hosts here representing each of the races in StarCraft II, our Terran player. Of course, we've got Pain User, our Zerg player, EG Idra, and our Protoss player, EG In Control. Guys, what the hell is up?
What's up, man?
Man, that was really enthusiastic. I'm excited for the show, man, now. Oh, man. Thanks for that.
What's up, bitches?
There we go, Jeff. That's what I'm talking about. Let's get in it. Let's get in it. So, anyway. Guys, another episode. I'll tell you what. The mailboxes exploded this this past week. Everything went absolutely crazy. We had so many questions. It got very difficult to filter through it. But it tells me that a lot of people looking for some really great advice and maybe direction from you guys. And so I hope you're excited, as excited as I am to get started with tonight's show. I mean, how you guys been this week? I know you're on the road, Jeff, Idra, you're on the road, Pain User. You just got back from being on the road.
Going back on the road, too, immediately.
Life on the road. You can see.
Yep.
Greg has got the cow pattern going on in the hotel room behind him. Are you back home, Jeff? Is that?
Yeah, I'm in the Pfister house.
All right, he's back. So, guys, we're going to be jumping right into it. If this is the first time you've ever watched Inside the Game, well, let me break it down for you. We have a few different segments that are geared towards helping players get better. In fact, I can prove that this works. Last week, someone called in, it was an email. They were asking about how to properly control their lings in the base. One of the things that Idra mentioned was, you know, using hold position, and I used the shit out of it the last week. So, yeah, go me. One person learned from the show, and that's all that matters. As long as we educate one person, then we're good to go. We're going to have a few more segments tonight, and we're just trying to help you guys out. So we'll get an opportunity for you guys to throw in mail to the mailbag. And to call up later on tonight, and as we get going here in episode 2. Last week, guys, we had a segment that was called Under the Microscope. And let me tell you that although we put you guys under the microscope, you remember the little force field discussion that kind of happened? There are some interesting thoughts about about the force fields and whatnot. And so many people responded. Like, with really good feedback. They loved what you guys were saying. They wanted to throw out their own suggestions. So it only made sense to me that we will do an Under the Microscope with sentries. However, what we're going to do is we're going to do it next week because, of course, with the impending patch coming out, we'll just see how it changes things up with the times and whatnot and see how people are going to use them. Just another aspect to explore when we take sentries under the microscope. So, guys, speaking of which, the patch is now out. Have you guys even had the opportunity to play with it at all?
I played a few games.
Yeah,
I haven't played it, but we just casted a day of NASL played on it, so I've seen a little bit.
Okay. So, any initial thoughts having an observer's eye into it, Greg, versus actually playing it, and then Jeff, I want to hear what your playing experience is so far.
It definitely changes the timings a little bit on like warp gate expand builds PVC, and obviously it has to change PvP, but really just haven't seen enough matches to say anything in detail. But
okay, Jeff.
Gonna affect the time too.
Jeff, any immediate oh my god, this is nice. I'm happy with this.
I think it's actually a pretty uneventful patch. It certainly slows down the foregate to a certain extent, which will be good for everyone, I think. But it's not like it slows it down so dramatically. It's not the 40-second change that it used to be. It's just the 20 now, which is about 66% of. Well, it's a little bit. It's like 70%, 75% of a gateway unit for the most part. So,
I mean, it's not that big of a deal. It could be. There's a lot of things that we say not that big of a deal, right?
We're not saying.
I don't know.
60. I don't want to do the math. I don't want to do math.
Don't do math. We never ask people to do math on the air, Jeff. So someone in the chat will do it, and we'll figure it out. It'll be all good. They'll throw it out there. We'll all look smart because of it. So, well, anyway.
It's not that big of a deal. It slows down the foregate, and I think the fact that they're able to do that without hurting too much other things is really good. Like at the start, it was going to be that they sped up the build time of all the gateway units. And I think that would have dramatically changed the game, so that like two gate rushes against Zerg would be more viable again. And that really complicates that matchup more for the Zerg, I think. It would have made it even harder for the Zerg, in my opinion. So
right.
I'm glad that they revoked that, because we don't necessarily need that help right now.
All right. Well, I've the only experience that I've got with the new patch is installing it. So awesome. And I suspect that people are going to start forming their opinions as they get an opportunity to actually play it. A lot of people did explore it on the PTR. But we will we'll check it out as it gets on there and we get some games played on it. And so that means we're going to go right into our next segment, which we got a ton of emails on. So I want to remind everyone, this segment's called You're Doing It Wrong. And you can send your email to itg@onemoregame.tv. We got a ton of people that are like, I think I'm doing this wrong. Help me out. So I'm very excited. But first and foremost, you guys remember we talked about the destructible rocks. We talked about the reinforcements last week, and a user on a forum talked about the rally to the rocks and how that acted as an A move. Well, I can officially tell you with much confidence that it's absolute bullshit. It doesn't work. I tested it out multiple times. Did you try it out too, Greg?
Or? No. I mean, just I thinking not. About it, me and Greg were just like, there's
no
way.
Yeah,
it didn't make much sense. That would be very surprising.
Yeah, so it is confirmed. It's bullshit. So that guy.
You know what, though? Right click. You guys are saying you're not sure if that works. That does work.
What do you mean? No.
And right click on destructible rocks.
Out of a production facility.
And have them attack move.
Right.
They move command to it and then start attacking it.
Right. Right.
Not attacking it.
And it's totally horseshit. So thanks for that.
Well, job well done, guys.
Yeah. You know, and I think the lesson we take from this, guys, is do not start a forum post with, you know what I do? I rally to the district, and I don't know if this guy was like thinking about it one night, and then he's just like, "This is a great
this is a real
opportunity
idea.
For me."
I want to take credit for this
exactly, and then put it down on a forum where probably a lot of people then were like, "Oh yeah, you know, absolutely, it can you can do it, it can be done." So there it is. It's no longer there. So our real topic here for our next year doing it wrong. What's that?
We're Mythbusters for StarCraft.
That's right. We are. And there's going to be another one next week that someone told me. And I want to see if it works. But I'm going to have video for it. Because I don't know. Well, I'll keep it a secret. Analyzing replays. At least 20 emails, you guys, from people who basically were like, yo, I feel like anyone can watch a replay. Right. You know, but can people watch replays effectively? And ultimately, in 10 different ways to ask the question. People were like, what do I need to look for? You know, what are the sorts of things that can help me identify my mistakes? What should I not care about when watching a replay? So I would like to just throw this topic out for discussion. What should a player look for? What shouldn't they look for? How do you determine where your problems are? And I can see Jeff thinking hard. Do you want to take this one first?
Sure. It's unfortunate because I think I'm going to have to give almost a cop-out answer. I mean, certainly the second effort will be to give the best advice I can, but usually with experience comes the ability to look at a replay and know what you're looking for. So I can't pull a bronze guy and say, okay, well, here's the three things you look for, and all of a sudden they're an expert replay analyzer. It's just this is my opinion, of course, but I feel like the more knowledgeable and skillful you get at the game, the more you're able to look at a replay and say, oh, well, that's what I missed out on. So that's the scapegoat answer. Now here's me trying to take an attempt to expedite the process for people. I would say the couple things you want to look for is you want to watch all the replays you lose, first of all, and you want to look at the disparity between what they did versus what you did. I mean, one of the first things you can do is, like, let's say they just showed up with more stuff than you have and you just were flat out drowned in units. Was it because they made more harvesters than you? Was it because they stopped making harvesters? Or was it because you were doing something like taking a blind third base against a guy who's going one base and then calling him an American idiot? these are all things that dumb people or people that lose generally do. So you have to watch out for those kind of things. But like for a while, my PvP was really, really bad. It's still a tough matchup for me, but it was quite bad. And I was finding out the part of the reason that that was happening was because I was continuously making harvesters while still trying to do strategies that require you to not make harvesters, like foregating or even, you know, like one base Colossus War of the Worlds, they call it. Now, conversely, I was also losing to people because I was doing macro builds, but not making harvesters as much. So, like, I would say just I recommend it revolving around the harvesters, basically.
Okay. And let me pull something out of there that you said really quick, follow up with that, is that you said when you go into a replay, you already know what you're looking for. And I think that there's probably several levels of ladder players that are doing exactly that. Like, how did this guy have that many units? He must have had a hidden base. Or, you know, kind of like what you said in comparison. Look for something right. that maybe you didn't know about. So, fair enough. Obviously, that's what you guys do. You're not like, oh, well, gee, I didn't realize that I had missed a pylon at this time, and that completely threw me off, and I wasn't able to do that. So I respect that. Now, if you were going to give answers to Johnny Bronze, and you were going to say, you know, obviously starting with the harvesters, but certainly that's just one thing. Mm. I want to try to expand on it for the lower leagues.
More thing to add, not to cut you off, sorry, is did you spend all your money? And I know that sounds really stupid, but when they attacked you, did you have 1,200 minerals? Or when you attacked them, did you have 1,200 minerals? Because oftentimes people miss that, but the difference between you like having 900 floating minerals or whatnot and them having spent all their money translates into them having more stuff. Which means that they can win. So that's another thing that a lot of people miss out on, but you can find in a replay.
All right, guys, Pain User or Idra, do you want to throw out some comments on this? I know that there's a lot of people looking for some sort of guidance and focus on this exact topic.
We're still on the replay watching?
Yes, yes.
Okay. For me, it's mostly about...
I'm not really sure if they meant watching...
Okay, it looks like I think Idra might be lagging behind a little bit.
Yeah.
On the road.
He's frozen now. Greg, are you there?
Hotel internet for the win. So, okay, Pain User, why don't you go ahead while we get Idra back.
Get Greg back online. Yeah, for replay watching, generally one thing that I look for, if it's a loss, generally, I'll know specifically what I'm looking for in the replay. I'll get really pissed right after a loss, and I'll just be like, all right, he won because of this, but I need to figure out exactly what his build was and how he got this so quickly or why he did this. So I'll examine it from his point of view and figure out what his build order was, what he did. But I'll generally fast forward to a point in the game where I know things started to go awry, like where I started making mistakes or he started making critical mistakes. And I'll try and look at that point of the game and just figure out where the major flaws were in my game plan and how I should have dealt with what he was doing better. And a lot of that oftentimes boils down to scouting at specific timings. And it also helps you a lot watching the replays because you can figure out, you know, different like time frames in the game. So maybe, oh, around the 6-minute mark, he's already got DTs, or around the 6-minute mark, this Zerg is taking his third. So you can figure things like, well, it would be more around the 9-minute mark for the Zerg taking his third, but you can figure out timings like that, and then you can contour your builds around that and come up with more powerful timing pushes and stuff like that, or times where you know you need to scout a specific thing just to figure out whether or not they have it. So I like to use replays to figure out a lot of different like timing windows within the game and stuff.
Let me ask you from like a comparison point of view. You know, Jeff talked about identifying things like, for example, I've got more money, my opponent has more units, therefore I kind of didn't do my job, right? But is doing things like you know, seeing where you're at in supply with your opponent, often maybe looking at the unit counting station. And I'm talking for a player that's really maybe trying to get into it. Because I do think, like, the higher level leagues are probably pretty good about scraping and scrubbing their replays. But do you think a lower player could find any use in that?
I think a lot of those stats really just boil down to macro. Like, I don't think necessarily, like, watching a replay and being like, oh, you know, my macro was poor here, is really gonna help your macro. I think a lot of that boils down to just mechanics, and then I mean, there's a lot of little tricks you can use. Everybody has their own little methods. Like, one thing I like to do personally with Terran to help my macro out a lot is have an SCV, or I like to call him Depot Joe. He's just my SCV that continually makes depots like the entire game, and I leave him on. I don't shift rally him back. Usually when I make a building, I'll shift rally my worker back to the mineral lines. But I leave one SCV continually producing depots, and every time he finishes a depot, he pops up on my idle SCV thing. So it's a constant reminder for me to continually build depots. And then during the mid game and the late game, usually I'll have two Depot Joes, just double building depots when you have enough production to support that.
Depot Joe. And does look like we are going to have Greg returning to us here. And looks like it's a little high there. But all right. So, Idra, now is your chance as I move you into the proper framing here. You cut out, but we're talking about analyzing replays and your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wasn't sure if the question is more focused on analyzing replays of yourself after you lose to try and figure out what you did wrong, or analyzing pro replays to try and pick up things from that.
No, I think it's definitely people were saying, how can I view my own replays?
Oh, okay.
And how can I help myself out more?
Well, really, all it comes down to is trying to pinpoint the reason or reasons you lost. Like Jeff said, there's a lot of the times it's the basics, especially if we're talking to, you know, a bronze player or a really low level player. It's just missing supply and not having enough drones or not having high enough worker count or floating money, bad control, just little simple stuff. It's not really specifics. Like, I don't know. Really, it just comes down to figuring out why you lost and looking for mistakes you made. But the problem is, if you know what those mistakes are, you know, I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that. Just look for the basic stuff.
This is interesting, you guys, because from my perspective, I was like, oh my God, like, these people are just, they're rabid about figuring out, you know, I want to get better. And a lot of people say, well, analyzing your replays is like one of the greatest ways of, you know, you get to be in an out of body experience and look firsthand at how you messed up. But I get this impression that it's a little difficult for you guys to answer and give advice to a lower leaguer because you guys have such a refined way or already know exactly what you're looking for.
Well, it's that and – go ahead, Greg.
More of it is that if you have reached the level where you know how you're supposed to play and it's more a matter of doing it correctly – then analyzing your own replays is very valuable. You just look through and see where your play doesn't line up with the theoretical proper play, which you know you're supposed to do. If you know you're supposed to have X amount of drones when a certain timing attack hits, then you can look at the replay and say, oh, I had too many drones. That's why I didn't have enough units, hence I lost. But if you're at a much lower level than that, if you don't know the proper way to play, if you can't look at it and say, well, why did I lose to that? Why didn't I have enough units? Then it doesn't really help to look at your own replays. You should be looking at professional player games, seeing what they do, copying them exactly. And then when you lose, you look at that and you compare it to their game and see what happened differently. Or okay. Find a game with the same scenario and compare it to that and see what they did differently than you. Because at that point, you have to figure out what the proper thing to do is, not where you deviated from the proper thing.
Okay, so I'm going to have a follow-up question to that. But In Control, I think you wanted to also make a comment on that.
Well, I just want to say that, I mean, part of the issue with watching your own replays and what to look for is, I guess to put it in different words, essentially what Greg just said, which is that it's very personal to both you as a player and also you in the game. Like, it's not always the same stuff. There's so many different aspects to this game. There's so many different scenarios that I don't think there's any three magical things that any of us could say that you have to look for and all of a sudden you figured it out. Some people lose because of harvester counts. Some people lose because they're getting supply blocked three or four times, so they're just literally tiering their play behind their opponent. And a lot of it's positional. I think this game's a lot more savage, if you will, about like you lose because you're just out of position as opposed to you just have more stuff like we used to have in Brood War to a certain extent. So there's a lot of things, and generally speaking, you want to look for just kind of – because also I feel like StarCraft II is pretty deliberate, and like there's usually one moment where you're like, oh, okay, well, that's where I lost the
right
game, you know? And I feel like if, in that moment, pause it, take a look at a few things like, oh, I'm supply blocked while I'm trying to execute a four gate, or, oh, I have all this money unspent, or, you know, stuff like that. I think that's a pretty good place to look too.
Okay. Now someone did ask, because Greg, you had said that you weren't quite sure if the question was directed towards someone who's trying to improve or someone who is watching a pro to maybe pick something up. And we might as well talk about that. It sounds like the chat wants you guys to at least comment on it, but I know I've been, you know, I'm sure we've all done it. Even you guys, you see, someone execute, a strategy, a build, and you either want to emulate it or you either want to know how you're going to stop it and kind of figure out the timings behind it, right? So let's talk about it from that perspective. And, you know, what should someone be looking for if they're maybe trying to emulate a build or learn how to stop a build based off of what they see in a replay?
Well, really, if you can, you want to go down as much detail as you can, down to pylon, depot, overlord timings. The drone counts, work accounts are very, very important. That's something I think a lot of people overlook. You really have to pay attention to. So worker counts and timings and everything like that. And then the hard part starts. Then you'll say, okay, well, I did all that. I did it perfectly, but my opponent did something that the opponent in the replay didn't do. How do I counter that? And then you have to go out and find another game of that style versus the different style or figure it out on your own and really figure out how the build branches off. So it's very complex. It's actually a lot of work to learn the ins and outs of it, especially in a game relatively young like StarCraft II, when a lot of different things can happen.
Do you guys use notebooks, pain user and control and notebooks?
Artosis is the only one.
Yeah. I've written down – dude, I mean, I have admittedly – opened up the wiki on Team Liquid and had build orders over there and just sat there. Like, done a little monitor look and just, you know, I mean, like, I get it. It makes sense if you're just trying to get something down. But no, no one's taking notes.
Every now and then, I don't have a dual monitor set up. If I did, I might do something like that. Like, put up a notepad with some big font and just have some, like, reminders. But sometimes I'll take a sticky note and maybe put, like, a specific timing window or something like that. That I'm trying to work on, or, you know, at this minute mark, I want to be doing this, or at this minute mark, I want to be scouting that. And it works. It helps for me to, like, instill mental reminders, because I think that's another really difficult thing about StarCraft II that I kind of brought over from Quake, is that you need to constantly have little timers in your brain going yep. off, you know, like the red armor or yellow armor, different weapons, stuff like that. And you can totally apply that to StarCraft II. It's just not, it's not repetitive 30-second timing windows. It's specific minute markers where there's general patterns in the specific matchup. So, you know, like in TVP or TVZ, there's so many patterns. And they all revolve around different points in the game and different timings. So if you can help yourself learn, like, important timings, like when Zerg is taking his third, when he's taking his fourth, when the Greater Spire is coming, things like that. And then against Protoss, it's like, when could he have DTs? He has this amount of Zealots and this amount of Stalkers, and he only has, like, one or two sentries. What's he spending all of his gas on? What's he teching to? Just stuff like that. And if you can write stuff like that down, and that helps you remember it, because I know it does for me. I do that sometimes with, like, sticky notes and stuff. So,
I don't know if I actually Scoots cleaned up my area, so he put everything away. But when I first started playing StarCraft II, guys, I had no concept of scouting at all. Like, obviously, I had the concept of it, but the execution of it, it just didn't ever work for. So, I just put this big ass thing. I drew a picture of an observer and had a probe, and it said scouting is your friend, you know, and it helped me tons. And, you know, for lower level players, like, absolutely. Well, it sounds like Painters, you still use it today. I think that's a good little tip to have. So, you know, analyzing replays, there is a thread over on Team Liquid that does have a lot of the concept that you guys have talked about. And, it's interesting because I just thought that this would be something that you guys would be like, oh, well, hold on here. I'm going to give you the 12, you know, kind of like what you said in Control, where it's like, there's not three magical things that you can tell someone. We can give them a direction, but there's no right or wrong way to actually do it. A lot of times you have to figure out what you can analyze yourself. You know, and maybe it's best to analyze with a buddy. You guys, I mean, certainly being on teams, you have to analyze replays together too, right?
If you have anyone, I mean, everyone's going to echo the sentiment. If you have anyone that has a StarCraft 2 mind, two heads better than one, three, four, five,
being able to watch replays
heads,
together would
seven
be...
heads, eight heads, nine heads, ten heads, maybe 11 heads, 12 heads are even better, 13. No one's going to stop me. 14 heads, 15 heads.
I'm going to wait until you get to 27 heads.
You guys are trolls, man.
It'd be great if we could get two heads to watch a replay together.
Great, just straight facing it, too. Let him keep counting until he gets to 35.
Exactly.
The more people you have, the better. Like, everyone's always going to miss something.
Okay.
So if you can get a lot of people involved, you're going to pick up on stuff. But even, and this is the debater in me, even if you guys all miss out on stuff or disagree on things, the conjecture, the discussion about whether or not something's good or bad is actually so beneficial. It's a big part of the reason why pro gaming houses are so strong and powerful. It's not
Absolutely.
Because everyone agrees. They're not sitting in the house going, yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was awesome. They're actually saying, no, actually, I think that was wrong, and here's why. And then they'll be, actually, I feel pretty strongly that this is the right choice, but the discussion right there, the argument is immeasurably beneficial for everyone involved.
And I would agree 100%. That's kind of like why we have some shows like this. So, okay, analyzing replays, guys. I hope we at least gave you some direction. And stop emailing me about it. Maybe we'll look at it another time, excuse me. So in a game that Idra and I were casting for the EG Masters Cup, there was a decision. There was like a moment to make a decision. And I actually asked Idra the question during the cast. And Greg was basically like, yeah, I don't think we actually have the time to talk about that right now, because this game is probably going to be over in about 2 minutes. And then he was right, it was. But the point is, and the question that I was asking is, there was a moment where damage was done. And in this particular situation, I believe it was a ZVP. Zerg had done some initial damage. And he had the opportunity to either expand or to attack. And I basically said, what sorts of things are you using as your criteria to make the decision that right now I just need to pump out the units and go, or this would be a good time for me to expand? I'd like to just throw that topic out there and let's see where it goes. Now, Greg, I don't know if you thought about it. You want to start?
Sure. I think it was actually Kiwikaki versus Mana, which is only really important because it's a PvP. And Protoss, the warp gate mechanic, really, really nullifies Defender's advantage because you can have reinforcements there just as fast as them because the distance doesn't matter as long as you have a pylon there. So it's actually kind of important. Their attacking was a decent decision. But generally speaking, it's always safer to play defensively when you have an advantage. Just turn it into a bigger economic advantage. Unless that, actually, I take that back. It depends on what the army or what the advantage is. If your advantage is an army size, then obviously you need to attack to take advantage of it. Otherwise, their economy will kick in and so on and so forth. In that case, it was that Kiwikaki had a bigger economy. So generally speaking, in that situation, it's better to just sit back and defend and allow your advantage to grow. Because if you do attack there, the attack could fail. Your opponent always has defender's advantage because their units get out quicker than yours. And they can pull probes. They often have defensive structures in place. And often they can control where the battle happens. They decide where to engage you along the map. So they can use map structure to their advantage. It's just there's a lot more factors that can go against you if you're trying to be aggressive. But if you defend and you just make sure you have enough that they can't kill you, then there's no way for them to really make back the advantage. Although it also does come down to scouting, because if they double expand or something, then you do have to punish them for it. So basically, you just watch for any kind of risky play, and otherwise you sit back and continue to grow your economy until you have an unstoppable army.
Okay. In control, I'm going to let you comment on that. Anything you want to say in relation to what Greg said? And I'm going to try to get Pain User back on here.
Greg was absolutely right during the broadcast, but even now, like, you could actually have a week-long show about this concept alone. But to speak to it real quickly, I'll just say that one of the cool things to have kind of on your mind and that you're conscientiously working on with this game is that while what Greg said is true for the most part, one of the ways they can make you a more dynamic and dangerous player is that with that concept in mind is being focused on what cuts corners to get around that. Like, if I have fewer units, but I have a ramp and several sentries, I don't have to have as big of an army as he does, and I can focus more money on advancing my tech or my economy because I know that in that situation I'm safer. Or if you're a Terran, things like planetary fortresses, bunkers, tanks, basically static defenses or digging in allows you to take that corner as well. Now, the other side of that coin for all three races as well is that when you're being aggressive, there's a couple ways you can go about that. And of course, this speaks to the question in mind in its entirety, which is that do you keep supplying that attack or do you back at home, quote-unquote, give up on the attack, but you're still executing it while at home you're macroing? It's just really important to understand, like, when you do either one and you get X result, why that happened, and not just, like, let it fade away into the background. Like, you just play the game and you were macroing while attacking, the attack gets smashed, and then you lose the game afterwards because you don't have an army, and then be like, stupid StarCraft, and then queue up the next game and move on. It's really important that you conscientiously engage and say, okay, it was a smaller map. I chose not to reinforce. I teched too many times. Let's see the harvesters. Ah, yes. I had 35 more harvesters than he did in a mirror matchup. That's really stupid because obviously I spent too much money advancing my economy when he was spending more of his money focused towards his army, and I didn't identify that. But it's really important to understand those concepts and to engage them, like I said, conscientiously, so that in the future, the decision and what you're doing grows exponentially parallel to each other, as opposed to, like, you're making choices but rolling the dice on the other hand. So there's nothing to be learned. You could lose or win, but it's not really up to you which one happens. So it's just an important concept of your gameplay to be aware of.
Okay. Some great perspectives from both of you guys. Welcome back, Pain User. Your thoughts on this as well. And, of course, from a racial state, I can see the races, well, come into play based off of your answers. You know, it does kind of change things a little bit. Some opportunities are given more to some races. But anyway, Pain User, your thoughts on this.
Well, to touch on what you said about the races, absolutely. I think especially with Terran, just because of you have the usage of bunkers and missile turrets, and if you happen to be making siege tanks are great as a defensive tool.
I heard that.
They can also be really good for attacking, but you need to take your time and you need to be really, really careful. As far as the attacking and defending after taking advantage, I think you really just have to kind of play it by ear. That's something you have to go with feel on 100%. And, like, you know, Artosis has the Artosis rule, like, when you're ahead, get more ahead. I think he might even take that a little bit to the extreme. I think sometimes it's actually really good to have a pretty solid killer instinct, like when you know you have an opportunity to win the game and your army is that much bigger, just to go with it. Because at the end of the day, taking it into a long, drawn-out macro game after taking, you know, a moderate or even slight advantage is not necessarily the best way to ensure that you're going to win a game. Sometimes it's actually good to just straight up kill someone and end the game. And I think a lot of people don't really have that sense. Jelizerg certainly does.
Well,
he's an amazing player in that regard.
Let me ask the other hosts, and you brought up, and you know, I think it's important we actually talk about this as we sort of shift gears a little bit. You brought up Artosis's famous, and you know what, Tasteless, when you're ahead, what happens? And Tasteless is like, you get more ahead? And he's like, that's right, Tasteless. So you bring up a great point about, you know, sometimes you have to have a killer instinct. And I want to hear In Control and Idra, you know, what do you think about that? There's certainly a risky factor to that, but you know, I think Pain User's right.
Like I mentioned at the beginning, my response, if your advantage is in army size, then definitely you do want to do something aggressive. If nothing else, just to scare them, because otherwise you're just letting the advantage go. The advantage is that you are stronger than them at that point in terms of how much damage you can deal. So if you don't deal damage or threaten to deal damage in such a way that they stop producing workers and they overcut it to defense, then you're just squandering it. The times when you should be defensive and let your advantage build is when you're ahead in either tech or economy. So when you have an aggressive advantage, then you do need to push it. Then you need that killer instinct. But when you have an economical advantage, then you do need to pull back. And I tend to be biased towards defending with an advantage just because, as Zerg, my advantage is almost always in economy and production capacity.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on this?
To be honest, what Greg said, I wouldn't improve upon it. I think that's exactly it. I guess I would limelight something just so that it doesn't get missed on people. I can't tell you how many times I've seen games won or lost because someone has a huge military advantage, but then they just pull back and play safe.
Yep.
But that's not actually speaking to the representation that you have in the game. Like, you need to make sure that they don't expand. You need to make sure that they're spending their money, what precious little money they have, trying to catch up to you with their army, because you just have to be applying some kind of pressure. If they pull back and feel safe, and they're a good player, then they're going to get to those units or make those choices that allow them to cut the corner and raise the value of their team or their army, I guess, without having the same number of stuff. Sure, they're a team. Yeah. I mean, one match that does come to mind is like when I played even in Snare for the North American Star League. He had a massive army. He had a tremendous advantage, but he just sat back on his half of the map and just sat there, and I essentially was always one base behind at least, but if you allow a Protoss player in particular to get up to 200-200 with their finely tuned cultivated army, then it can kill more than it's actually, you know, like their worth. I don't have to have as many bases as he does. I can kill more. So that was a bad choice by him. Had he been dropping and constantly trying to run up and down the ramp with this huge army, I wouldn't have been able to sit back and equalize my economy so that I could spend money on the higher value units like a Phoenix or Colossus. I would have had to just churn out more gateway units, which is totally fine for a Terran Orzer.
All right.
I totally agree with that.
Anything else to add to that, Pain User?
I mean, no. I think in general that's pretty much a good way of thinking about it. Like especially if you're playing against a Protoss, you can't allow them to stay even one base behind you. You might feel like you're ahead if you're 4-base to 3-base Protoss, but like Jeff said, that army is just so lethal and efficient that if you allow him to get situated and get what he needs, get those upgrades, mix in the Colossus, get force field energy, it gets to a point where the Protoss army can just become unmanageable. And to deal with it, you have to be dropping all over the place, preventing him from expanding, or if not, just trying to outright kill him. If you get a pretty big advantage, I think it's actually really good sometimes for people not to play that passive, laid back style where they try and draw it out into a macro game. Sometimes it's absolutely necessary, I feel like, to play a macro game and do that. But for me, oftentimes that'll be when I'm slightly behind, to be honest. If I get slightly behind in a game and I don't feel like I have an opportunity to kill my opponent, then I'll try and go for the slow, drawn out macro game where I eke out small advantages towards the late game. So if anything, for me, it's kind of like the inverse of the Artosis rule.
All right. Well, Artosis, you know, sometimes it's not always okay to just get more ahead, although I tend to
say, I mean, it's safe.
Of course.
To be fair, it's safe.
Of course it is. Now, I guess let me just how many times have you guys ever gone, okay, this is my moment to attack, and then it just fails massively? Any like
what happens?
Yeah. Almost never for me, but that's just because I don't attack.
And happened to me today.
Good. Yeah,
it does not feel good. It's the delayed. You know, you feel you just feel bad. Like whenever you put it all on the line with the timing or something like that, or some kind of cheesy strategy. It just doesn't feel good when it doesn't work. It's not the safe way to play, that's for sure.
Right. All right. Well, guys, keep on working at it. Expanding versus attacking. You're doing it wrong. Some great answers from you guys. Hopefully all the people that submitted questions kind of looking for that as well. Got some answers with that. I think it's still one of those things that with more experience, you're going to refine it. And also just your playing style, because Greg, you kind of said, this is my style, so I tend to go this way versus that way. But even when we were watching these matches and we were broadcasting these matches, it was very apparent you were saying, like, this is a smart decision based off the information that he has. So it's kind of always situational and always something that you got to be working out. So, all right, guys. Well, I think we're just going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I've got this whole page of mail for you guys, and we'll take some phone calls too. How's that sound?
Awesome. Phone calls were quite fun last week.
You guys, okay. All right. Well, then maybe I'll just pick the good cream of the crop and we'll go right to the phone calls then. But we are going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, Inside the Game continues. Don't go away as we return with Pain User, EG Idra, and EG In Control. I'm DJ Wheat. Don't go away. About ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Inside the Game here on our next hour where we take questions from you guys, and I'm dipping right into the mailbag. The first mail item is actually from DJ Wheat, and he writes, Pain User, now that LG is kind of gone, what the hell do you do now?
Well, start back from ground zero. I mean, I still have a lot of connections with a lot of different people. I have good friends that are on a lot of prominent teams. So it's just a matter of getting back into the swing of things, starting to play more, and then.
Do you feel like the prettiest girl at the ball?
Hmm?
Do you feel like the prettiest girl at the ball?
You're like an eligible bachelorette.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What
like
the
Cinderella.
Like why is the actual saying Greg just explained a situation that girls find as well.
Greg put it in terms I could understand. I mean, I'll take a look around. I'll shop around. I've already had a bunch of offers, but I mean, there's so many teams that really aren't on the level of, say, an EG or a Fnatic. There's a lot of teams that are aspiring to be on that level, but there's a very big distinction between a team that can actually consistently send a player to events and pay salary and a team that is like, you know, a couple people with money that have a dream. And that's kind of what LG was, and it was awesome while it lasted. And, you know, I wish Noah the best in whatever he does, and we'll see what happens.
But no hard feelings there, just kind of, you know, I guess the circle of life a little bit.
I mean, I would have liked to have seen, you know, like a more concerted effort by management to like to make stuff happen. But I knew going into this whole thing, and Noah was pretty clear about it with everyone, that, you know, it was kind of like a pet project for him, something that he was willing to invest money into, but not necessarily something that he was really going to invest that much time into. And I think in esports, you know, it's very difficult to get serious sponsors. They're not just going to come knocking on your doorstep and make offers to you. You have to go out there and be proactive about getting sponsors, and you have to market your players and come up with a sponsorship proposal package, and none of those things really happen. So I would have liked to have seen a more concerted effort to make something like that happen. But at the end of the day, you know, if you're funding an entire esports team out of your own pocket, I mean, that's not something that can go on forever. So I understand, and I'm cool with
it's,
it.
It's a tough job, you know, for anyone who's like, when I grow up, I'm going to be an esports team manager, just like Sir Scoots. Well, it's not easy.
It is a monstrosity. It's just a monster of a task to get sponsorships.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it's something that, you know, may seem so easy, and you get a chance to talk with a lot of people involved with teams, you know, different things like this. And they all say it's one of the hardest things ever. You know, it's getting better. It's getting easier. A lot more events. You know, there's a ton of tournaments. You guys are getting yourselves out there even more. But it is certainly a very tough thing. So, Pain User, we'll be asking you for updates consistently, okay? You cool with that?
Yep.
All right. So, our next question. Believe it or not, there was a chick who watched this show. Her name was Megan.
Yeah,
Megan
right.
says,
yeah.
Well, you know,
there's a guy who made his name. Man.
Let's just pretend, Jeff. Come on. Everyone will be like, there's a girl that watches the show.
So I got back from tennis lessons.
Megan says, yeah, she says, I'm new to the StarCraft II world, and I'm a 24 bronze Protoss. And this is her question, right? I'm reading it, and I'm like, okay, I wonder what she's going to ask.
24B.
I'd like to know what is the one thing that irritates a Zerg player the most.
Hmm.
Megan, the 24 bronze Protoss. Who? Yeah, what do you think? Greg? What annoys you?
Really play really, really defensively and get a big Stalker Colossus ball at any Templars if I go Infestors. Blink under my Broodlords and otherwise just attack move.
What that was that that's what irritates a Zerg the most?
Well, that's the hardest thing to beat.
Oh. So automatically that's just
Greg, that's, you gotta engage this question. What when you lose to it, or what when this happens makes you freaking turn red?
Any kind of all in with a force field on my ramp. Continuous force field.
Yeah. That's why Queen should just crush force fields, man.
Shut up.
Yeah, that would be awesome, Greg. Or Jeff, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, so the thing I would probably say that is one of the biggest things that irritates is a Zerg, you know, for sure. I don't know what else, man. I don't know. The other thing that irritates me as a Zerg is when I look over and I'm like getting ready to hop into a game and I look over and it says player and underneath them it says Zerg and I'm like, shit.
Oh, I'm happy then. This is actually a fair game.
Okay. Well, you know what? Since you just asked Zerg, let me ask, what is the one thing that irritates a Protoss player the most, Mr. In Control?
God damn. You know what sucks too about being just a side rant real quick? I'm going to answer this
drop
question.
Drop it on me.
And it can't actually be the real answer, because the real answer will actually, people will troll me. They'll just do it a million times because everyone watches all these shows. Like,
right.
There was a time on Say the Game where I was like, oh, you know what people should do because I'm really bad against it? Then everybody did it because everybody listens to that show and they all talk to their people. They all talk.
Right.
So here's my people. Second answer.
Here's my second
answer. Lots of medevacs and marauders. It's so funny to like walk in with five Colossus and feel like you can kill everything and anything on the planet. And then the marauders are just still sitting there shooting their little poop bombs at you off their wrists. Like,
yeah.
What are they still doing there? So oftentimes, though, and to go back to that replay analysis point, it's because you interact with the marauders without having thrown up force fields and kept them away from you. Like, it's always your fault, basically. But I hate it when – I'll just say this. Out of position attacks. I've lost so many important games because I have this amazing army, and I get lazy. Like, every StarCraft II player knows this feeling where they're like – they just stop doing the little things that's supposed to win them the game because they feel like they're so far ahead that they can't lose anymore. But then they lose. That's the sickest feeling in the whole world. It's bad.
Okay. I agree. There's a lot of sick feelings that I have trouble dealing with. Pain user, what's the most irritating thing to a Terran player?
Mine is pretty much exactly the same as Greg's, except it's a different form of all-in from Protoss. People will do it every now and then. It's like a four warp gate robo off one base. It's like the most retarded all-in ever. But basically what they do is they fly a warp prism into your main with usually two sentries and a zealot. And then they've saved enough force field energy on those two sentries. They drop them out, and then your army is down at your natural, right? So generally people do this if you've done like a gasless fast expand or maybe like a single gas expand, and then they force field your ramp. They deploy their warp prism. They start warping in zealots and stalkers and additional sentries, and they just continually force field your ramp, trapping all of your troops at your natural, and they kill all the STVs in your main. And then, generally they win from there.
I have never gotten that to work.
You know,
who does
it's
that?
So good.
You bring up this point, pain user, and like immediately I'm just thinking, God, wouldn't it just be so great if Queens did bust those force fields?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You're a troll, man.
I am trolling hard. But because
if Blizzard hears you and makes that change, I will be E.G. Angry Jeff is now Zerg.
But then people would just start pushing with Queens, right? Against Protoss.
They already are.
Yeah, yeah.
Queens are good, man.
Queens are good.
They throw stones at you and they poke you. They do damage when there's like eight of them.
I've got I got another question here, submitted by a lot of people, very interested, and they want to know specifics. What kind of keyboards and mice do you guys use? I mean, that's obviously an easy one for a few of our guests. Pain user, you want to start off with this one?
I use an MX518 Logitech. I've been using it forever. It fits my hand really well. I've really, really, really big hands, so I can't really use like the Microsoft 3.0 or any of the SteelSeries mice or anything like that. They're just too small for my hand. And I've always used a QCK cloth. It's really smooth, and I really like that mouse pad a lot, and you can just bring it anywhere. And for keyboard, I was using the SteelSeries 6G with the black switches, but I actually just recently ordered Philco with the MX Brown switches because I don't like the actuation point on the black switches. They require, in my opinion, like way too much force to actually get the keys to actuate. So after a couple hours, like my fingers will be kind of sore from playing on the black switches, and I really like the brown switches a lot.
Sounds like you need to do more finger exercises to me.
Maybe. Who
Maybe
knows?
You should point the finger, not at the keyboard.
I don't know. I'll be interested to hear what Greg has to to say about the switches and stuff, because I know you switched to a SteelSeries.
Yeah, I do use a 6GV2, which does have the black switches. And it's okay. It was a little bit hard to press at first, but after getting used to it, I have no problem with it. The key size is good. The height is good. Actuation is fine for me. So, you know, I'm fine with that. And I use the SteelSeries Kinzu. I just use it because it's the smallest mouse they have, and I have tiny hands, so it fits me. And then the SteelSeries 7H or the Siberia ear set, depending on the situation.
Is it really just called the ear set? Is that what we call it?
Yeah.
Siberias are comfortable, man. They're real comfortable.
No, the ear set, the little in-ear thing.
Oh, the in-ear.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the old school Siberia. Is that what you have on, Jeff? Are those the old?
No. These are the Siberia Big Whiteys. That's what they call V2.
Oh, and an SP mouse pad. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Is it cloth or synthetic?
It's textured plastic. I actually really, really like it. I love hard pads. I love low friction. But if you get a lot of the hard pads, they have problems with tracking if you get any kind of sweat or anything on them. But the textured plastic pads I've found, they give almost the same friction as the smooth hard pads, but they don't have nearly as many tracking problems. So I love the SP.
Word, Jeff, you want to throw anything in there?
Oh, yeah. You know, I used to use Razer stuff, but then Sir Scoots rolled up on a golden magic carpet, and he tossed me a box of SteelSeries stuff, one of which was a SteelSeries 6GV2.
Yeah.
Found it to be vastly superior to all things Razer. It's a fantastic chunk of keyboard. I then used the SteelSeries Xi, spelled with an X. Found that to be pretty awesome.
What, that it was spelled with an X or that the mouse
yeah,
is awesome?
All the above, man. Every last bit of it sounds awesome to me. In fact, SteelSeries is so cool, they said, hey, Jeff, how do you feel about testing out one of our new mice? And they sent me this super secret prototype thing, and I've been using that right now. And I can't say anything about it because then I'll get sued. But we'll just let it hang there for a minute.
Go ahead.
And then I use the 6G, the Siberia headset, and it fits around my ears. It produces sound. Pretty awesome.
And then I had to do that.
Yeah, it's really good at that.
It does what it needs to do. All right.
It does. It does. And then I do have the EG mouse pad that SteelSeries made, which is you can purchase that on the website. Some people have asked me that. It's pretty awesome. It's actually big enough for your whole family to play on. Yeah. So if you have a couple of left-handed people, or if you sit in such a way that everyone's right hand can fit onto the mouse pad, the whole family can play on that one mouse
Listen,
pad.
Listen, I have to tell you guys a story, right? So, Scoots actually got upset at me because I took a mouse pad, like one of the big guys, and it was just too big for my desk. And I cut it. I just
it's like a federal offense, I think.
I just used some scissors and I cut it. And that was all she wrote. So, and you know what? I would just like to defend myself. I swear to God, there was no intentions about that question other than the fact that I got it 50 times in my email. Only when I read it to you guys did I realize that the whole world was going to be like, oh, my God, we just asked this on purpose. So I kind of feel pretty stupid for asking that, but that's okay. We learn from our mistakes. To which case, I'll just open up the fucking phone lines.
No, we don't use everything SteelSeries. I use – Greg, what is my mouse bungee?
It is mouse bungee. That is like the brand.
It is just
the
brand,
from mouse bungee, which is not SteelSeries. And I do use that. Greg uses a – you'd have to ask machine mouse bungee. But both of those are not SteelSeries. Oh, from same company.
Yeah.
Mouse bungee.
I think they've actually discontinued. I don't know.
Someone posted that Idris should use the Chester Creek keyboards. And actually, it's funny because that's what Mini Wheat uses to play StarCraft 2. It's like the mouse is – I should go grab it. It might be perfect for you, Greg.
I think you're being made fun of, Greg, but I can't tell. I don't want to click on the link.
I would assume so. Well, we shall see.
Chain fusion.
I do also use, if we're talking about
Yes, that does look perfect for me.
Yeah, don't you think? Like, I mean, look at you can palm the shit out of that thing, man. Yeah, that is full control right there.
I feel like I have long fingers. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Anyway, there we go.
I use Gunners as well, and if you play multiple hours, they're actually really good for your eyes.
I like them as well. Do you have a prescription?
I do not. I should. Well, okay. I do have a prescription. I just never wear my glasses. I'm blind as a bat all the time.
That like reduces the strain on your eyes. I've never actually.
It magnifies it slightly. I guess something with the tinting.
UV rays or whatever. The harsh. It blocks out a lot of the light that would otherwise be detrimental to your eyes. It increases longevity for which you can focus on a monitor.
You know, here, like, the best way that I kind of can describe them is you wouldn't go outside and just stare at the sun for 7 hours. But when you're staring at your computer screen, and a guy like me, like, I work in front of three screens, doing bank computer stuff, and then I come home and I've got these things flashing in my eyes for another, 5-6 hours, it's kind of the same thing. It'd just be like looking at the sun like this all day long. So it's like, you put on sunglasses to block that shit outside. And in the same case, you're kind of doing it here as well. But that's sort of the way that I've kind of approached it. And they do seem to help out a lot with the eye strain, I feel like. So anyway,
they look sexy too. They do
look a little, look sexy.
I feel like a metrosexual starfighter pilot.
And actually, someone told me about like a program that you can run on your computer that like simulates some of the same stuff. I wish I remember where I read that from, but
simulates some of the tinting.
Like it changes the light that comes on. Because I was totally like, F-lux. How the fuck did it do that? What is it?
They're saying F-lux.
That must be it. Lux. Yeah. I've never tried it. But I mean, if people are interested,
real men stare at things with their eyes. And the strong can keep staring while the weak have to look away.
All right.
Sorry about that, guys. I think my cam's back now.
It's okay, man. It's okay. It's okay. Skype. We only lost half of our viewers the moment your pretty face
owning me
on here. We're gonna go ahead and open up the phone lines.
It came back though like a cloaked banshee.
I'm
zing.
I ruined the hate or the BattleNet email. So good for me. Send questions to ITG@onemoregame.tv, guys. Trying to scour through those. Did have an awful lot. Some specifics in there. I'll leave a few of these over. Unless there's anything on here, guys, or you want to go right to phone calls, because we only got about 25 minutes.
To the phones!
To the phones, they say. All right, guys. Well, it's real easy. You can go ahead and Skype us at DJ Wheat, or you can telephone 909-581-8519. Now, let's pretend like Greg is me, and I'm calling into the show. So, Greg, do you want to pick up the phone call?
Hello, this is Inside the Game.
That was perfect.
That was so good.
That was perfect.
What are you doing at Greg's hotel?
Okay, so I'm about to respond. I'm about to respond.
Hello, caller.
But before,
DJ Wheat.
Do you like to talk with me on my television show?
before I respond to the amazing enthusiasm that DJ Wheat has just introduced me with, I'm going to turn my stream down. There's actually a mute button here, and I'm hitting it right now. And then I'm like, "Hi,
wait,
I'm Bobby."
DJ Wheat, if you do that, you can't hear us.
No, you can, because you're talking to us on Skype. And you're like, I'm Bobby. I'm a ProDOS. I was mistakenly put into Grandmasters because the patch broke BattleNet. And my question is, and then there you go. So let's see how successful we may or may not be in this paint user. Your cam.
Paint's are frozen. You did that.
I was poking Jeff in the eye. Like
All right. We're going to take our first call. It is going to be Zeffy. Zeffy, welcome to Inside the Game. What is your question, sir?
Hello. Thanks for having me on. And my question is basically specifically for Idra, because I'm the Grandmaster Zerg. It is, what hotkey setup do you use, and what injection method do you use? And for which reason,
I have
course.
All my... What? I have all my units on... What did you say?
Let me repeat it. I wanted to add, and for which reasons do you did you choose it? Because there's, for example, the backslash the backspace method, where you jump from the hatch to hatch, and there is like the double tap method where you bind all the queens.
Double tap.
Yeah, I put all my units on 1 through 3, all my hatcheries on 4, then queens on 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8. Double click the queen hotkeys to inject and to move around bases. I chose that. I don't know. After they fixed the thing where you could put all of them on one hotkey and do it with the wireframes, I just kind of went through, and that one felt the most comfortable. It would probably be worthwhile switching to the backspace thing, rebinding the hotkey to tilde or whatever. I'm just kind of lazy, so I'm sticking with what I use already.
Now, Zeffy, I hotkey all my queens 4, 5, and 6, and then if I have any more, I just manually click on them, and then I click V, and then on the hatchery itself. And I also like to... No one's laughing. You guys are really
I'm actually just out of respect for the caller, just not laughing. But Zeffy, there you got your... No. All right, thanks, Zeffy, for calling. There we go. Jeff's like, there's no respect to callers on this show. This is the help desk,
passive-aggressive response. Oh, sorry. Out of respect to the caller, I was just not doing anything. It's like,
Lord. All right.
Sensibilities.
We're taking the next one, fellas. We've got Jonathan on the line. Jonathan, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey,
what's up?
My question is for Pain User and In Control specifically. Colossus and TBP, I find it really hard to find a balance between ground units, medevacs, Vikings. How many do you usually aim for? And In Control, like, how many do you find is a good number? And how many should you go for a small amount and try to micro and try to cut off and do damage with upgrades, or should you just get a lot?
Are you talking about Colossus or Vikings?
No, Vikings, sorry. Yeah, Vikings. How many Vikings should you get?
I don't know. I think it's really advantageous to get enough Vikings to one or two shot the Colossus in either one or two volleys. And then it also really depends on what the Protoss player is doing. Like, Jeff, take this away as soon as I'm finished. But when a Protoss player is building Colossus, sometimes they'll only build like 3, and they'll get a really heavy gateway army. And in that case, it's probably not a good idea to invest in, like, you know, 12 to 16 Vikings. But if they're going for, you know, 5 to 7 Colossus, then it's 100% necessary to have, you know, that really strong Viking count to be able to two-shot volley them. And in general, you just want to engage with your Vikings, take pod shots, pick off Colossus when and where you can, just be really, really careful. And then as far as medevacs are concerned, generally I'll have, like, you know, 2 to 4, but usually you don't have enough time to make that many medevacs, because as soon as the Colossus start coming out, you need to start producing those Vikings. You can't just continually produce medevacs, because your starport, you just don't have enough production as far as starports are concerned to mix between medevacs and Vikings. And then generally, after the Colossus are dead, you can start producing medevacs again once you've killed them and won a big battle.
Yeah. I guess speaking from the Protoss side of things... Nope, we're not speaking from the Protoss side of things. What gives me a tough time is... When the Terran focuses down the Colossus, first and foremost, that's a really important thing. If you just A-move with your Vikings, they'll kind of sporadically shoot at the 5 or, you know, the 4 or 5 Colossus, and they'll kill them kinda. But what usually happens is that, especially if the Protoss is focusing down the Vikings, they'll lose enough attack power to kill any Colossus at all, if not just, like, one. In which point in time, now you have 4 Colossus standing behind a gateway army that are just never going to get touched, which means you eventually lose that fight. So absolutely focus down each Colossus, because each Colossus actually represents an important like tier to the battle. If they have four Colossus, that's really dangerous. But if they have three, then like it's actually two is like the magic number for now. They're just kind of annoying. They're really not that big of a deal at all. Unless, of course, you've just made pure Marines, in which case they're like Jesus Christ and Moses on top of blazing saddles with lightsabers and stuff. It's like ridiculously powerful. Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about when I say that. Exactly. Look at DJ Wheat not laughing out of respect to the caller again. That son of
a... out of respect. Never mind.
No, we got it. Jesus
Christ. Terrans that make more medevacs difficult to handle, like... You do want to scale to their army, and that's the most important point. Like, if they have 6, 7, or 8 freaking Colossus, you damn well better have close to 20 Vikings, because you're just otherwise going to lose your entire ground army before you ever kill them. But at the other time, if they only have like 3 or 4, you don't want to have 20 Vikings, because they probably have a strong representation with their gateway units or some other tech. So it's really important that you keep your eye on them. But if you can, like, you want to have 6, 8 medevacs and you know, somewhere in there, because that actually gives you the ability to stim and then survive the battle, but also continue the battle after you've won. If, like, you only have, or if you have no medevacs, God forbid, and you win the fight with a kind of small marauder army or whatever, you don't really have the ability to go attack anymore, because every time you stim or even surviving your own stim, now you're, like, halfway dead, and whatever they warp in is going to kill you, so... I find medevacs to be a pretty important balance to have, too.
All right, caller, thank you for your call. That was Jonathan. Going to take another one. We're going to take this one right here. We got Jason L. on the line. Jason L., welcome to Inside the Game. What's up and what's your question?
Hey, I'm Platinum Terran. And I just want to ask, what do you guys think the future of the Raven is going to be? Is it just going to be a detection whore or a PDD once in a while? And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Guys, your thoughts?
Terrans are stupid.
I mean...
Terrans are stupid because they still don't use that unit.
They're going to be required in TBZ. Well, first off, just for creep spreading a little bit more efficiently, or preventing creep spread. But Banelink, Banelinks... Banelinks are going to become ridiculously good.
Yes.
Just because the map size... Originally, everyone was like, oh, bro, Banelings are going to be fucking awesome. They're, like, really, really good. But then that we realized you can get across the map in, like, 2 scans. So in that case, it's not really worth the investment. But now that we're getting these bigger maps, you can't get across Tal Darim. It takes 4 or 5 scans. And if you take a couple of Banelings in your Marine Ball anywhere across that, it essentially ends the game. So people are going to have to start getting Ravens purely because of the strength of Broad Banelings. It's just up to Zergs to start using Broad Banelings more often now that they're effective. In order to force that.
Oh, man.
What Blizzard has to do is they have to give a buff to the Raven, but then not give the buff, but have it in the patch notes to draw attention to the unit. And then the Terran unit, or the Terran players, like moth to a fly, or excuse me, moth to a light, I guess to a fly as well, maybe they're
I heard there's some stuff going on there, yeah.
Well, yeah, there could be. Then they will be like, oh, I should check out that unit, and then they'll find out it's really good. And start using it, just like the ghosts. Like they're just swapping around 50 resources, and Terrans are like starting to talk about the ghosts, like it's a viable unit now.
Dude, what? I heard that it can take like, away seriously. The shields from the Protoss.
Oh, okay, well I could save 50 gas.
I mean, yeah, I totally agree with that. I always thought ghosts were good, and I've always used them. But Ravens, I mean, I don't know. I think they're primarily going to continue to be used for detection. I don't really see. I mean, PDD can be really effective against Protoss if they're going relatively stalker heavy. But generally, if a Protoss player scouts you doing some kind of like one base Raven all in or anything like that, they'll start producing a lot of Zealots, Sentries, and probably Tech to Colossus relatively fast and just avoid units that can be PDD'd. And then Auto Turret, I actually played around with Auto Turret for a while because you can get the Terran Building Armor upgrade. And that actually works on your auto turrets, so they can get a lot of armor, and they're pretty. They have a lot of hit points as well, so they're pretty strong. But they just don't kill things fast enough, and the Ravens are such an expensive unit. And the whole deal with Hunter Seeker or Seeker missiles is the energy cost is just way too high for something that moves so slow that has not even a guaranteed chance of hitting. I mean, there's very few units that are even slower than the Hunter Seeker missiles. So Mutalisks can generally avoid it.
All right, I got it. Because I'm just going to cut you off there for 1 second. Because I'm sorry. Because, like, you know, I feel like I've heard the exact same thing about the Hunter Seeker before. So let me just ask you straight up, Pain User. What has to be done for you to use this goddamn ability? Is it 75 energy? Is it?
I think like 125 energy, maybe. Or 100, like 100 energy, and then maybe decrease its damage and make it move a little bit faster. Then I would probably use it a lot more.
Okay.
You know what the actual issue with the Raven is? It's not – there's no spec on it that give Terran a tough time, including the price. I'm going to call straight BS on that. It's that Terran's – it's the building it comes off of. Like, they don't want to build – Raven, because in the mid and late game, they don't have a starport that has a tech lab on it. They have a reactor. If they put more starports down, it's to get more medevacs out or more Vikings out. It's not to get more tech labbed air units out. And they don't want to swap it around. They don't want to take the time to do that. There's no Terran that's like, where can I find the 200 gas? It's because when they make the Raven, they're making it in the early game. So if you made the Raven, like, spontaneously appear for that amount of resources, guess how many Terrans would freaking make them? Every one of them. Or if it came out of the barracks or some shit. Build it off the command center. That could be the third.
Wow, you just totally made it.
GG.
Painters, man, forget it. I'm done. It's over.
He just went cloak. He'll be right back. He's going to run out of energy eventually.
All
right,
let's hope. I wasn't, I really wasn't, you know, trying to disrespect there. I just, you know, quite frankly, was just curious. I want to know, you know. I think that it's kind of like the same thing with the, you know, a Nidus worm. It's like, well, what would make you, well, how about they don't lose to like a Marine and an SCV? That might be good. Let's take another call, guys, and see if our buddy gets back online. Here we go. We've got John on the line. John, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, I'm a master Zerg player. I have two questions. The first one's for Idra. I've been watching your stream a lot, and I noticed you have a lot of problems with Hellion Harass. There's two things that you can do to prevent it. One of them is evolution walls and spine crawlers. And the second one is the stop on all your units and using F1 to separate them all out. What do you think about that?
I think that those are two things you can use to prevent Hellion Harass from doing a significant amount of damage. What do you mean?
What, can you reiterate your question, John?
Are you going to start using those more, or what do you think about them?
I don't have problems with Hellion Harass. Spine crawlers, speedlings, and queens are fine.
I've been watching your stream too, John. I'll side with you. Greg has a ton of trouble with them. He's
Thank
a bitch.
You,
All right. My second question was for In Control. What do you guys look for when recruiting members specifically?
Ooh, good question.
People are good at blocking Hellion Harass.
That's true. Greg actually had to pay us to join EG. It was a good deal for us overall. But it's a really good question. I think EG is in a different state than it used to be, where in the earlier StarCraft II period of time, we were looking for that talent. We were looking for those guys that were going to have like the promising abilities for StarCraft II. And even now, actually, that I say this, we've been looking at a few players, and some of the things that are really important to us are that they're not just a flash in the pan. They're not someone who, like, found an abusive way to play and is having some success now. But more importantly, that they're someone that is, like, taking this game very seriously. They're conscientiously and actively working on their game, so they're improving. It's kind of like the professional perspective. Like, they don't just play this game casually and we're like, hey, well, how do you think about joining a team? They're like, well, I don't know. I've got these other teams that are talking to me like, no, shut the hell up. Like, we want people that are like very serious, know what they want, and are willing to work really hard at that. But then also, they need to have results. Like, we're not going to grab an upstart player and give him a shot or something like that? Probably not. I mean, we actually even talked about a few of those. But for the most part, we're looking for tried and true and very serious people. But it's a really cool question because there's a lot of teams that don't necessarily have that perspective. Like Root has actively said that they want to pursue those people that they can bring up and kind of train to be better players that have promising qualities and talents that they think that they can cultivate. So there's definitely different teams looking for different people, and I think that's it's really interesting to see the different takes the teams have.
All right, John, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Even though I'm not really sure what the hell you were asking in the first minute and a half, I think Idrad is in the same boat. I think he asked the question and
he told me I was bad at something and then provided two answers to it and decided one I was going to start using.
John, you pissed off Zergs.
Yeah.
On Inside the Game.
Yeah.
Yo, I got a question.
That's what happens.
I heard you suck at this one thing.
That's why.
I was wondering if you thought of this other thing.
I completely expect, you know, like the intelligent guy. And then even if they sound half intelligent, I'm just, okay. Look what happens. It's okay. You handled that very well. Handled that very well.
I heard you have a tough time saying GG when you lose games. What do you think about typing GG?
All right. We're going to take another call here, guys. We probably got about 10 minutes left. Let's take this one. We got Yuri on the line. Yuri, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi, everyone. I'm from Brazil. I would like you.
Go ahead. What? Hello, Yuri?
Yuri.
I heard we were from Brazil, and then that was that was it.
Intra.
All right, you guys don't get to interact much with the European audience, do you?
Brazil's not in Europe, you goofball!
Oh man,
you're such an American. God.
The first guy that called was European. This guy's South American. Let Mr. Geography, let me break it.
Oh, wow.
Anyone outside of the U.S., you bastard.
Dude, listen, I've been to Copenhagen. It's one of the most beautiful German countries or states that I've been to. I obviously know a thing or two about Europe.
You do. Man, sorry. Okay. I want to give Yuri a second chance here. Let's give Yuri, hello. This is take two here. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hi, everyone. I would like to know what they feel about Spanish was build.
What do we think about Spanish was build?
Build.
What is
build?
What else is it going to be? It must be his build.
Building.
What do you guys think of Spanish was build?
What is
all right,
that, like
Yuri,
mass,
thank you. For
mass
your
link?
Like, no, the, it's the
infestors.
No gas. Fast expand. Use queens. Only drones. Don't use larva for anything but drones.
I think it's really good. I think it's solid. I think he could definitely afford to throw banelings in there, though. I don't know why you like a lot of people
use banelings. Well, actually, I don't know. I think it's going to be so bad versus the other races. I haven't even tried it, but versus Protoss, he uses baneling drops a lot. It's like that's the whole point of it. You open up with really late gas, and then you put down four gas and rush to baneling drops in order to hold off timings. And then you just get aggressive with baneling drops and then switch into later game.
What I like about it is what it represents is the stage of StarCraft II that we're in. Like, it's really early on. There's concepts in, like, what people thought was, no, you absolutely have to get metabolic speed upgrade at the beginning. And you absolutely have to make a beeline to roaches. This kind of takes it and flips it on its head and says, no, there's actually other ways you can do things. And I think that in and of itself is a really important lesson, not just for Zerg players, but for StarCraft II players. There's too many people that are falling into the trap of like, well, this is the only way to play because I saw so-and-so do it. There's actually a lot of experimentation to be had and a lot of new things to be worked on, and I really like that about the build. Like, who the hell would have thought that six queens could hold off everything? Or, you know, that you didn't want to take gas until you made 40 freaking drones.
Listen, Jeff. They can only hold off everything if they can bust force fields, all right? Stop rubbing it in. We're going to take the next call. We got area code 919 on the show. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. I had a question for all three of you guys. So basically, you guys have been getting into casting lately, and I was wondering just kind of what do you guys see, like, as an advantage of casting, and, like, would you guys ever choose casting over playing if you had the choice?
That's a great question, caller. Thank you very much for that. I'll let you stay on the line to hear this since you're on the phone.
Okay.
Who wants to start?
Payneuser.
No, I do.
No, Payneuser wants to answer first.
Payneuser can answer first.
Sure.
They're just going to steal your answers, Payneuser. Go ahead.
I think, well, for me, it's going to be my job coming up here pretty soon. So I'm going to be doing casting full-time and just working on esports in general for the esports department for IGN. So I'm going to be working a lot on it. I love it. I love everything about StarCraft too. I love the game, but I obviously enjoy playing it a little bit more because I'm competitive and I love competing. But casting is also really fun for me too because I get to experience the tournaments as if I'm kind of participating in it. You know, I'm along for the ride. I'm keeping track of all the results, but I'm also being able to interpret and analyze everything that's going on in the games and reach out and connect with all the viewers and stuff. And I really enjoy that too. So I love both. And I'm probably not always going to be able to do both. But I'm going to attempt to do both as long as I can until I have to make a serious decision about one or the other. And yeah, I think that pretty much does it. It's also a lot less stressful than playing in tournaments. That's for sure.
Oh, what was that?
Did someone just crack? Did you guys hear that? DJ Lee just ran through
until 30 guys want to gang up on you because you missed a medevac drop that had like two Marines in it. They're like, dude, there was a medevac that had two Marines in it.
Successful than like losing games and stuff.
I don't know, Greg.
I don't know what
man.
You guys are talking about. Commentators barely get criticized.
I was just playing anyway. All right. No, it's seriously, because it is a good question. Jeff, you've been doing NASL now for a long time. We're about to cast the EG's Masters Cup here right after Inside the Game. So I want to hear your perspective. And then Idris, and we'll probably wrap up the show on that. So,
one of the cool things that I've learned – my webcam's about to fall over – since doing NASL is that I am absolutely a player. Like, I love StarCraft II with such a fiery, burning passion that commentating is so fun. And it's not just my love for StarCraft II that makes commentating fun. I like speaking. That's any chance I get to give, like, a prepared speech or even an impromptu speech, it does definitely pull on a certain aspect of, like, my soul that is saying, yes, this is what you should be doing. This feels good. You want this. So commentating certainly works towards that, and I really do enjoy it. But I am always going to be a competitor. I'm always going to be a person that takes offense when he loses a serious match that he trained for or is disappointed in himself when he's not considered one of the best. Like, when people stop talking about me, that's when I'm like, what the hell am I doing wrong? Like, I got to get out there and start thrashing some skulls. So I will always be a player. I'm always going to work as hard as I can to win tournaments. I would rather win a tournament than be a premier commentator.